Now, for youngsters, they've become the must-have toy with programmes like such as Walking with Dinosaurs, which I found amazing. Being so popular, there's been a new interest about what took place on our planet tens of millions of years ago. Well, our next guest not only has a passion for dinosaurs, well, blow me down, he's discovered two for himself. Welcome to Dr. Mike Taylor from Ruadine and the Forrester Dean, who's both a paleontologist and computer programmer. Have I said that properly?
Oh, yes.
It is paleontologist, mm-hmm. not paleontologist. Paleontologist and computer programmer. Goodness me. Which is your main function, then? Is it paleontology, or is it...
Well, it's computer programming is what I do through the day, and it's where I earn my money, so I suppose I'd have to call that main. But there's a real passion for paleontology.
I can see. When you came in, I started talking about it. It was just absolutely amazing. I've never met anybody with such a passion for these. You discovered two dinosaurs. Where did you discover them and how?
Oh, well, I discovered them in the most fruitful possible place to look for these things, which was in the basements of museums.
So right. Of course you did, yes.
There's really very little need to go out into deserts and places and hunt for new fossils, because all our museums are stuffed with things that were excavated 100 years ago and that nobody's really looked at since then.
So you went and where did you find them then?
Well, the first one I found in the Natural History Museum in London. And that was a single bone that had been excavated 113 years previously. And just had a label put on it then and basically been ignored ever since in a cabinet.
It's got a name. It's what these two dinosaurs, these fossils, they've got names. You've got one's called what? Something thigh or something? Thunder thigh, is it?
Yeah, that's the second one. Its proper name is Brontomerus. And that's Greek for thunder thighs.
So what? God. What animal did it come from then?
Well, both of these are sauropods, so they're my favourite kind of dinosaur. In fact, they're the only ones that I work on. So they're the super giant dinosaurs with very solid, hefty bodies and long necks and long tails.
People of faith really have a problem about dinosaurs. I've met people over the years when I was serving as a Methodist minister who said, you know, dinosaurs didn't exist because, you know, God invented this at such and such a time, so where do the dinosaurs come from? And somebody once said to me, it's a trick of God, actually. But you're a man of faith. You go to church. How do you link faith and science together, then?
Well, in a sense, I almost don't, because they're not doing the same thing. They're not trying to answer the same kinds of questions. So as a Christian, the sorts of questions I'm asking and interested in answering are, why is there a universe, and who is responsible for the universe? But as a scientist, the questions I'm asking are, how did the universe get to be the way it is, and what was the mechanism? So as a scientist answering those questions, there are all sorts of reasons to recognise that evolution has taken place over millions or even billions of years. But as a Christian, that's true, but it doesn't really affect the substance of why there's a universe.
You were asking the wrong question.
Well, I think they're both perfectly good questions, but it is no good asking one of those questions and then giving the answer to
right.
the other one.
Yes. I should say that you came to my notice during the programme because you wrote an article in, was it Christianity magazine?
That's right.
About a few months ago, and very interesting it was too, and you partly answered that in the article as well. How did you get interested in all of this then? Were you one of these kids that used to go around burying, you know, finding dog bones all over the place?
No, I was very fond of dinosaurs as a five-year-old and a six-year-old, as I hope every child is, otherwise something's wrong with their childhood. But I did grow up, and then I evidently suffered a sort of a regression and arrested development 10 or 15 years ago. And I couldn't really say why. It was some years after Jurassic Park, so it wasn't that. But I just suddenly started to find dinosaurs fascinating again, as I had as a kid, but obviously with much better position to really learn about them.
How does it feel when you go out trying to, you say you don't have to these days go into deserts and find fossils, but they still turn up at various times. What's it like when you're out there sort of, it's kind of prehistory archaeology really, isn't it, in that sense? What's it like when you find something?
Well, do you know, it's my guilty secret, as I've never actually been on a dig, not once.
Never?
So, never, not ever. And there is a good reason for that, and of course, it's because my day job is in programming. Mm. I just don't have the amount of time to take off from that I would need to go on extended digs and, you know, making my way through Patagonia and all the rest of it. So the work that I do in paleontology has to be just a day or two stolen here and there at a museum. Mm. And that's why I find these things.
I remember going to the Jurassic Coast a few years ago in Dorset, of course, and I was just astonished at the kind of stuff you can find along that coast. That is a particularly important part, isn't it, to find fossils?
Yes, it's hugely important. Historically, it's where many of the most important fossils were found, and you know, the first fossils of all sorts of important extinct animal groups.
What about Gloucestershire then? Is there stuff ripe for? Well, you obviously haven't been on a dig yet, but if you were going to in Gloucestershire, is it ripe for digging?
If I were going to, I would make the effort to go somewhere other than Gloucestershire.
It's really like really.
I'm afraid so. Though we have literally just a couple of bones from sauropods in Gloucestershire. In fact, there's a couple of vertebrae, parts of the backbone, in the Gloucester Museum in the city centre. But so, it really is literally two bones, one from the back and one from the tail.
So what makes Gloucestershire not such a good part for paleontologists?
Well, you'd need a geologist to answer that question properly, but roughly what's going on is how old the rocks are that are exposed at the surface and how much the rock is exposed at all. So the reason I mentioned deserts earlier, they're a great place to look for fossils because you don't have all sorts of grass and undergrowth and everything obscuring the surface of the rock. So any fossil that's weathering out in a desert or in a cliff face, which is why the Jurassic Coast is good, those are the places to look. But Gloucestershire, you know, it's all rolling fields and forests. Yes. And so whatever fossils might be there, we're not going to see them.
Just lots of medieval villages that are no longer there in Gloucestershire, I suspect. What's the response of fellow scientists? You must meet lots of scientists in your other world. When they find you're a Christian, what's the response?
It varies a lot. It's an international process, of course, any sort of science now. So a lot of my friends in the sciences are American, where their attitude to Christianity and also particularly to creationism is very different.
You said with a smile on your face.
It's a real problem in America, much more than it is in Britain, because this is a sad thing. I find that a lot of my American scientist friends are very hostile, not really towards Christianity or towards anything that's at the core of Christianity, but towards the creationism that is really the only part of that they see, because it's so visible and so loud in America. So a lot of people over there have the sense that what Christianity is all about is opposing science. Well, that's not really a winning strategy to take when talking to a scientist.
No. Finally, I saw Walking with Dinosaurs and all the rest of it, and I was fascinated by the whole thing. The question I'm going to ask at the end inevitably is, how did that age come to an end? How do you perceive the age of dinosaurs to have come to an end?
Right. Well, it's clear that about 65 million years ago, something catastrophic happened in a way that was very quick in geological terms. And by quick, I mean taking maybe a few hundred thousand years, but not millions of years. Now, exactly what that was remains a subject of a lot of research and discussion, but there are two main suspects. So the popular one, and I think the general feeling among experts is the most likely, is that the Earth was hit by something from outside, either a comet or an asteroid, something like that, which would have had incredible devastating effects. And it's not the only time it's happened, by the way. Earlier in the history of Earth, there have been similar impacts that have brought about other mass extinctions before the dinosaurs. And the other possible suspect that could have done it in the conservatory with the lead piping is a huge, huge section of volcanoes in India. They're called the Deccan Traps now. It's where the lava flow covers an absurd amount of space. And all these things were erupting for a long while around the time that the dinosaurs became extinct. So that would also have had a big effect on the environment. So probably one or other of those, maybe both of them working together.
We must get you back on again, because this is far too interesting for just one conversation. Mike, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Teaching me a lot and getting me to say paleontology in the proper way it should be said. Have a very good day.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Mike Taylor from Rhodine in the Forest of Dean. If you've got anything you'd like to comment on what Mike said, 01452 307575.